Hello, welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. If you are like most, you are here because you want to gain insights on how to best scale a business. To achieve optimum scaling, many metrics are important. Sales, leads, cost of customer acquisition, gross revenues. However, as you know, no statistic is as important as profits, both net and gross. For over a decade, your host, Richard Doherty, has helped his clients increase their profits, often turning them into profit-rich winners. To help listeners like you achieve stellar profits in business, Richard has written an ebook entitled Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It includes profit-making advice from Richard, as well as some of the top guests he's had on the podcast. Just for listening, it is yours free. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. Now, over to the show with Richard Doherty, founder and host.
Hello, I'm Richard Doherty, CEO and founder of ScaleUp Consulting and author of Unlocking and Profit Zones. And I believe that the founder's mindset and attitude is vital to scaling up. And here to talk with me today is Nicola. Nicola is the soon-to-be CEO of FinLeap Connect. Prior to that, she's had a stellar career. She has worked in several senior positions. Those senior positions span across fintech, FMCG, and also media. She's worked at the likes of PayPal and also OptioPay. So, super excited to welcome you on the show today, Nicola.
Hi, Richard. Thank you so much for having me.
Brilliant. And folks, as always, I like to dive in a little bit before jumping into the show, just to give you a bird's eye view as to what we're going to be chatting about today. And as everyone's aware, as a leader, especially a leader in fintech, which is a competitive environment, you're likely going to be working towards and anticipating future growth, even in today's markets. However, no matter how prepared you are with dealing with all the things that might come in, the sudden influx of demand for your products and all your services, this can be intimidating. And this can also lead to you as a founder, as an executive team, sometimes feeling, you might feel overwhelmed or even confused about what steps you should be taking next. And in all honesty, there's a lot to consider. You need to consider funding. You need to consider PR, marketing. What about building your team, a team that stands the test of time? So today, I'm lucky enough that Nicola accepted my invitation to come to the show. We're going to be diving into what it takes to really build up a strong unit, a strong team that allows you to succeed. So, Nicola, let me get you into the conversation now, and let's start at the top. And I think the top is around mindset, and specifically around the founder's mindset. And how, in your opinion, how must the mindset of a founder or a leader in a scaling business, how must that shift as you start growing and you start scaling up?
It's a very interesting question because I believe that there is a strong shift that happens over the life cycle of a tech company. Whilst a lot of founders early stage are very product focused, and that's what you need. You need to build a product. The life cycle of a VC, first you need to have a product, then you have to have some revenue, and then you need to all of a sudden have a lot of revenue. So that shifts the demands from from founders that are usually very, very close to the product or to the fundraising in the initial stages, to building an organization that becomes a scalable entity, as well as a focus on revenue generation. And that transition isn't always easy to make. Sometimes there's even the phenomenon of the founders being the only people who sell if you're in an enterprise or B2B environment. That obviously isn't the right path either, because you're not going to grow enough. But that transition to really start building a strong commercial unit and to really be fully responsible for the revenue generation is something that I think people don't anticipate. And how would you?
Yeah, no, I like it. I like what you're saying. And I always say to my clients that there needs to be a healthy obsession with what you're doing. Firstly, you need to be in it. You need to have a passion for it. And when people have a passion, you can play tennis, you can have a passion. Football is a passion, but also there's a slight obsession. So be obsessed, right? But by being obsessed, also don't take your eye off the ball when it comes to goals. Make certain you have the right goals at the top of the pyramid, and also those goals filter down into your executive team, also your teams below. Don't lose the sight of those, right? Make certain that you can also flip. I mean, you mentioned product-led and also, you know, invested, but make certain you can sort of flip as a leader, and you can lead a team, but also, you know, make certain you can inspire a team, because the team is going to get you to the next level, right? I also like to say that you need to continue learning, but don't unlearn the stuff that's actually relevant, because a lot of the times there's new stuff coming in and you're building up and building up and building up, and you forget about some of the simpler things. Maybe it's a how to scope out a specific IT project, and you get other people to come in and do that. You know, hold them to task. You know, you've been through it, you know what it is, right? And also, I also like to say, make certain you're strategic, but also opportunistic. And, you know, once you start looking at these five elements, actually, I don't want to say scaling becomes easier because it's difficult, but you can start building a framework that you can work inside and work towards, and start leveraging different angles of those sort of five steps or that framework to allow you to build out what you want to build out. And I don't know your thoughts on that. Maybe you got a similar type of framework, or maybe it's something slightly different. But yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think that's those dimensions that you pointed out are all obviously essential to startup life.
Yeah.
And what I'd like to maybe add to that is a certain degree of professionalism that needs to come in at some point. So inspiring, yes, but if you're already living a product that doesn't exist, your salespeople won't be able to sell it, right? So if you're already a year ahead, because that's the story you're telling to investors, but you don't have those features, or you don't have a value proposition around that actually built, that becomes difficult. So make sure you're not running ahead of your organization that is actually struggling to get into the market what you currently have to make money with that. So I think that's one thing. And then a certain professional toolkit you need to bring in, you know, BI, really, really KPI driven running of the organization. You have to, you know, also measure things like sales calls, velocity, those kinds of things that sometimes don't come natural to founders, and its structure. So how do you marry your need for freedom and your need for entrepreneurial doing and output creation with the demand for a growing company, and you know, the people within that growing company get more direction and to be numbers driven? I think that's sometimes you don't want to build a huge construct that isn't flexible anymore, but at the same time, you need to start measuring stuff so that you can learn and that you can then tweak and improve, not to mention process, contracts, all those nice foundations that, especially in a B2B or B2B2C world, we really, really need. So yeah, so that doesn't come from day to day. So it's not as if you're the small company and all of a sudden you need the big thing. So it's gradual, but it's a lot of things you need to think of that a lot of people simply don't have experience in.
I like it. I like what you said there about, you know, freedom, but also data-driven organizations that allow you to make the right decisions, right? And also what you're saying is, you know, all of a sudden, just because, you know, maybe you onboard 100 or 200 or 300 customers, doesn't mean that the next day you have to have this amazing infrastructure, but it does mean that you as a strategist and as a lead in the organization need to figure out what the best way is to continue to build that infrastructure, right? And build it step by step. And maybe there's, you know, sales focused data initially or support focused data initially that allows you to start at least seeing exactly how the engine room is working and how you can tweak that engine room to, you know, get a better cadence across various departments, right?
Yep. There's also the issue of killing your own puppies, right? So you move from a belief-driven organization, which is early stage because you have no data, to all of a sudden data points. And those data points sometimes don't tell you what you want to see. And that can get quite frustrating. So then how to reevaluate how long you move into one direction, or actually when you may want to take a stronger shift. And I think the learning I've had, at least from my last position at OptiPay, that one of the things that pays off is to stay incredibly close to your customers and to keep talking to them and to really involve them and not make sure that you never end up too high in your ivory tower, because these are the people essentially, whether they're B2B or B2C customers, that pay your bills. And they may need something different from the very fancy, super techie stuff. You know, a lot of people talk about AI, which is really just some data analytics at this point, but they really just need simple stuff to solve their day-to-day problems. And sometimes we're in the tech world, we love to think the big thoughts. And I think if you stay close to that, if you have good KPIs, if you have good storytelling, that I think is a good foundation. But one of the key transition moments, I believe, in a scale-up is when you bring in professional salespeople who tell your story. You know, how do you make yourself somewhat independent from sales without letting go of the responsibility for revenue? And I think that's one of the key moments in any scale-up story, because it needs to happen. Otherwise, the company will not be able to grow. And that, I think I've seen that several times, and there's no magic formula for it. It's just something to be acutely aware of and to plan for it.
As you've gone through that process a few times, I mean, what are the steps that you've taken as a leader in organizations that you've seen taken in companies that allow a sales team or a sales leader, maybe it's a CRO, maybe it's a chief growth officer, that allows them to come in and actually, you know, embed themselves into an organization, and then obviously take that, you know, take that department, take that company to the next level? Maybe not the secret sauce, but what are the practical steps that one needs to think about and start planning for?
Obviously, it really depends on the product, the kind of product you're selling. But let's assume we're all selling software, and And let's take B2C out for a moment, because B2C is performance marketing, and it's about the money you throw into the funnel and then how well you optimize it. But that one is actually one of the key learnings, is that you have to build products so that it allows for technology-based sales process. And in a digital world, whilst we need to often speak with people, meet them in person, build relationships, in order to scale, you need to build as, you know, super professional funnels in the B2B world as you do in the B2C world. Bit more complex, but product needs to work in line with marketing, with sales, and with key account management, customer success, and it goes back to product, or customer care to product. So all that needs to be managed with the technology process and the right tools without being inflated and needing, you know, 25 people to manage it. So I think thinking about that early on in the process and making sure that your product has things built in that allow for that, and that you create the relevant content that you can then take out into the digital world in terms of marketing and lead generation, is something that is important, rather than just solely relying on the previous approach of relationship-based selling, which you can and must also do. But you need to create more volume in your sales funnels in order to then have a relevant output at the other end. And I think that's a key learning that I probably underestimated when I first moved into this world, that really it's as much of a machine, a technology and a digital machine, as is the actual product and development side.
Yeah, 100%. And you see it all the time. And I think I was talking to a friend yesterday, and they slightly different business, but they are, you know, in software dev house. Obviously, you know, tech companies outsource or nearshore, offshore some of their tech to them, and they're going through an expansion into the UK market. And I said to them, I said, listen, you know, one thing is, just as you said, you know, you can take a look at your key accounts, and you can come into the UK, you can start talking to folk in the UK. That's fine. But take a look at the likes of 11FS as an example, and see what they've done from a consulting perspective, and actually more so from a digital content point of view. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, I think in the space of a few years, they are, you know, seen as a guiding light in the fintech and financial services industry. And just through the means of media and digital marketing, they are able to play with the big boys, the likes of Accenture, the likes of KPMG, the likes of, you know, that funnel, as you say, and that digital marketing is an important aspect of obviously, you know, scaling up. And it's important to understand that it's not just about sales, because I know we have to get professional salespeople in, but it's also about PR and marketing, making certain that, and when I say PR, we're not talking about, you know, just going out and then promoting ourselves and our tech and saying it solves the world's problem. No, we're going out and we're saying it solves specific problems for our market. And then we market it in some way, shape or form, right? But that's one example that I just think is a very visible example to folk out there that you can see it actually work. So once you start thinking, think of marketing and sales, PR marketing and sales, not just sales, right? Because there's a whole funnel, a digital funnel that you need to sort of consider, right?
Yeah, and an interesting one is always in addition to what do you do in-house and what do you outsource, right? Yeah. We have a tendency to underhire sometimes in the earlier stage tech world, I think. At the same time, you don't want to inflate something with people where you have no data evidence or a real plan. Mm-hmm. So I think what something to look at as always is to test early and then to figure out what kind of people you need as a core team and what other stuff you can outsource to experts that you don't need in the long run. Bring in that expert advice as it helps, but also understand that not external agency or any external expert or freelancer can do your work. You kind of have to know quite a lot of stuff to be able to brief someone to then maximize the value you get out of these people. So that's an interesting problem to solve, actually, because it might make you slower to do everything sort of in-house. But I think to a certain extent, you have to, which also means you need some sort of marketing design, creative people, content people, or you have to just allow for this to be an essential part of your own role as a leader and a founder, which I argue it should be, because you're probably the best person in the beginning to write that narrative and to ask for support. And so it's interesting how language is so important. And there's so few people out in the market who can work well with words. Yeah. So, you know, there's a spin and a talent and also time and focus element. And then you can build that whole machine around it. And then you have some specific roles that will cater to it. But you have to control the narrative and write it in the beginning yourself. You have to generate it with clients, and then you have to find a way to professionalize it.
Yeah, I like it. And yeah, you need to, there are specialists out there, right? And the reason they are specialists because they focus on a specific topic. But checking that with the word of caution, you know, you as you're going through this journey as a founder and as a scaling business, you also need to get to grips with what marketing is going to produce, what your narrative is, as Nicola mentioned, what sales is going to produce, why marketing, PR, and sales might need to sit together rather than being separate. You need to figure that out and have a very clear understanding, because if you go to the market and you start hiring, for example, a sales executive before you've done any marketing and you're trying to figure things out, well, you know, what's going to happen? Let's be honest, there might be some blanks fired, right? And there's going to be some frustration on both ends. So it is up to us as leaders and founders to also figure out the playing field and then bring in the specialists to play in the certain positions. And then you get the most out of them, right?
I completely agree. And I want to build on that by basically saying it always comes down to the same thing. You have to have done your homework. And so let's talk for a moment a bit of standardization versus personalization and opportunity. I really believe that you can make your life a lot easier if you standardize certain things. For example, if you have a consultative selling approach, well, you want to maybe create some standard workshops that are always part of your sales process where, you know, you have a well-oiled machine, someone from products coming, clients paying for that workshop. And then at the end of that, you have pretty much done a requirements engineering job. And then you know whether this is something you want to take on because it's pretty much workable with your existing solution, or if it's so customizable that you have to question yourself. And then you can make a call on it. But, you know, sales processes get dragged out by adding something more, adding something less. And we all know these little cartoons of what the client said he wanted, what the consultant understood, the whole thing. And let's not kid ourselves. When we're in the technology world, we want to get as many people onto our standard solution as we possibly can. Yeah. Everything else is expensive and it's potentially dangerous. And we're also moving away from a business model. What we want to see in, certainly when we're talking about SaaS models, which, you know, everyone is trying to generate, a lot of people, is, you know, a solid license fee volume that goes through those clients, which generates extra revenue, and a cost base that probably has to be pretty high in terms of individual salaries, because you need really good people, but you don't need many of them. So you want to create a technology which has an 80% plus operating margin or revenue margin, and that's then, and then you want to have people who maximize the output of your individual accounts and make sure your contract duration is long and you don't lose anyone. So I think with the light of that, in the early days, we tend to sell pilots for nothing. We get and fall into the pilot track. We amend our product for certain clients a little too much. Mm-hmm. And it's understandable, but you have to pick the right moment to step away from that, because as you add more countries, more complexity, these kind of legacy issues will come and bite you. That's also the point when you start saying no to certain things, which, you know, in the beginning, there will be good reasons to do certain things, but then there needs to come a point where that is no longer your game. And if it is, then you need to question whether you're a technology business model or whether you're a consultancy. Fine, very different model. Yeah. You don't need VC to run a consultancy necessarily. You can probably work with the mezzanine with the bank loan, but ask yourself, what is my business model and what do I need to do to bring this business model to life and to make it work?
I like it. And another thing, just to play with what you're saying, Nicola, is early on, it doesn't matter if you open tomorrow or if you've been running 100 days or if you're scaling up. My view is you need to get to grips with the numbers, right? You need to be running especially nowadays, the market's changed, right? You need to be running a profitable business, right? And, you know, what does profit look like? And what does budgets look like? And who in your executive team is owning those budgets? And what are they doing in order to hit their targets and make certain, you know, different parts of their delivery is actually delivered? I mean, it's vital that everyone has a view on profits and everyone is accountable to delivering certain things around, obviously, the transformation of the business and also the selling of the product to various customers, right?
Yeah, and I think we're talking unit economics here mostly rather than macroeconomics or company economics. So, because that you can decide on a leadership level, but we're coming back to OKRs and that element, right? So you set your big hairy goals, but everyone in the company should understand what numbers they're contributing to, and these can be just a single conversion rate in one part of your product. But it's measurable. There's a lot of stuff that isn't measurable that we need in terms of people and culture and team, but we should know which are the KPIs that are going to make us successful. And success often means what the investors want to see at the beginning, but also what our customers need to succeed. And then focus on these. They may be not getting you to profitability because that's not what you're gearing towards. You may be gearing towards traffic and you need to invest to generate that. So it will change, but inherently you need to understand what margin your product will give you. And then you can decide how quickly you want to move towards that profitability target. But investors, and this is nothing new, we've all heard it over the last few weeks, investors are moving completely, especially in the fintech world, from oh, I like the team. I've seen something in the space happen. I'll put money behind it. They're now numbers focused. And unfortunately, I think it's the right thing personally, but it's the reality. And so at least unit economics is what you need to talk about. I don't think an early stage business needs to now all of a sudden be profitable within a couple of years, but the path to profitability needs to be clear.
Want to increase the profits in your business? Download Richard's ebook right now, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. It will help you find new ways to increase your profits. Best of all, it's free. Go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.
Listen, we've spoken about a lot here. We've spoken about mindsets, the shift. We've spoken about sales, marketing, PR, standardizing your product and also making certain that you have a grips with the numbers as you're moving forward in your business. Outside of that, I mean, as you've gone through your journey in various companies, what are the other one or two things that you consider important as you're moving through the gears and you're starting to scale up your company?
I think one of the key aspects as an operational leader is to find focused time to work through important issues and proper problem solving, not short-cutting. This is going towards more of working style, but also the pressure in scaling up a company can put on you. If you stop being able to elevate and to look at your business with a slightly sort of outside perspective, then you're in big trouble, my point of view. So if sometimes it's better to do less and to decide to just not to do something in order to be able to have some sort of space in your head, than to do too much yourself. And if there's no one else to do it, well, then something needs to go. And I think that's something that I've learned and that I have great respect for. And that is something that I'm trying to tell myself pretty much on every day. If I can't step out of, you know, the details of what I need to do, and invariably, you know, large contracts, partnerships, international expansion, key hires, regulatory stuff, you get confronted with more detail that your brain at some point can handle. So it's about empowering the people who can handle that these bits. But the other thing is to really ask yourself, is this the right thing for me to work on right now? What do I need to do to answer questions of what's happening in 6 months' time? And am I losing myself in minute detail? And I think in addition to all the numbers and the hard facts and the product, that's one of the key challenges that you face in these always overwhelming situations. This is not building a technology company and taking it to scale is super tough, and you're doing it in a short amount of time. So, you know, it's not, and get a coach, really get a coach. Dear men out there, please get a coach. It's not a sign of weakness and it's not time wasted. Yeah. It is super important.
Valuable, right? Yeah. Listen, I mean, I completely agree with that, especially on the last bit, having a sparring partner or coach. I've done it. I've had many. I've gone through quite a few, and actually a lot out in the US actually, because I think they, for whatever reason, I felt that they had a different view on certain parts of the market at different times. But it helped me look at my business in a totally different light. And then, you know, it gave me as a founder in my business the lever to not vent, but to release some information into someone that could actually guide me along different parts, rather than a leader always trying to lead and make certain that there's a path well traveled for, you know, a wider team. So, you know, vital ingredient. I don't know if you've had a similar experience.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to work with some amazing coaches in my time. And in fact, for this new role, I've made sure that is part of the journey. So I really believe it's important for an individual leader, especially when you're, you know, a founder and here still a majority shareholder in your business, because again, can get quite lonely with all the different relationships you have to manage, but even and equally important as a team, because we tend to all be output focused and output driven in all our conversations and meetings. And I felt that especially during lockdown, everything was just purely delivery. And there's a risk that you lose yourself as a team in that one. And if you have a third party, as you just pointed out, who's neutral, A, you have the ability to vent, because you can't, there's hardly anyone you can do that with who knows the other. You know, you can do that maybe in a trusted circle of friends or with your partner, but they'll go, okay, just let it out. And then is it gone now? Have a glass of wine. But the other thing is really that you then, you can talk to that person, and that person will have also talked to that other person. And then in my experience, what usually happens is not validation, unfortunately, but it's a questioning of, okay, so what can you do to change that situation? What can you do? And then you go, oh, the monkey's back on my shoulder. But that's, and they do that with the other people too. And I think it then facilitates the actual trust and the relationship element within the leadership team, especially, but sometimes also within the the vertical part of the company.
Yeah, no, brilliant. Totally agreed. And you know, as we wrap up this part of the podcast, we head towards the flash round. You know, what do you want to? What's the last message you want to give to founders out there in the fintech space that are going through a scaling journey right now or growing up their businesses? What's the message you want to give to them as they head towards their growth of their company?
I don't think there's a universal message, but right now and in the short term, it's tougher times. As you know, the market is nervous, it's slowing. I think it's to continue to believe in your value proposition. And, you know, unless you're giving everything away for free, no one's happy to pay for your solution. But there's value in what you're creating, to figure out who the key people are you work with and retain them, and to obviously do something to stretch your airtime, but also not to stop believing in yourself. If you're heading towards the next funding round, there is money out there. People do invest. It's not all doom and gloom, and we need to all pull together to not create that sentiment in the market that we're still on a technology growth journey. That's an underlying fact. And we're lucky enough to be in a sector like that, unlike some other industry sectors. But it is going to be slower, and it's going to be tougher, and money is going to be tighter. So I think an adjustment is probably the right thing to do. But this is still a great industry and a great community. And having gone through 2 or 3 economic crises in my career so far, this too shall pass. And the question is just how smart can you be to make sure that you get the leeway and the airtime to navigate these waters? I think that's the short-term view. And then I guess the other element is really focus on business model and pricing and market demand. If you get that right, if you get people to pay for what you do, then things should be pretty much okay, unless you have to create a delivery base that costs 3 times as much. But so know your business model really, really well.
Brilliant. And some really good advice and some really good direction for all of you folk out there. So, you know, as everyone knows now it's the next part of the show. We go into the flash rounds and we do some drum rolls. And so the flash round, what is the flash round? Everyone knows it, but I'm going to tell, I'm going to explain it to Nicola. I did mention it before the show. We go into the flash round. What is it? I ask you 3 questions. They're simple questions, yes or no. So no malicious intent at all, just a bit more information out of you from the back end of the show. And then, you know, I hand the mic over to Nicola, and I know she's been thinking long and hard about the questions she can ask me. And she asked me a question. And then at the end, we high fives and we walk away and we enjoy the sunshine in Europe. So here we go. So my questions for you today, Nicola, as a scale up, what is more important as you build out your solution or you build out your business, considering what parts you should outsource or considering how you should build up that know-how and that team internally?
Number 2.
Okay. And by the way, there's all right answers here, right? There's no wrong
answer. No. Number two first. Before you have no idea of what your internal capabilities need to be to run the core of your business, you don't know what you can outsource.
There we go. Brilliant.
And then, yes, you should outsource certain parts, but
first
things first.
Yeah. What's more vital to a leader when they're going through the scaling journey? Is it more about execution? Or is it more about strategy first? Strategy first or execution first?
It depends on which part on your journey you are.
Yeah.
I have a tendency to go with execution, assuming that your strategy is clear. So you've come so far as to raise money to have a product market fit, then it's all about execution in the instance, but you have to revise your tactic and your strategy. I think strategy has to be done at an earlier stage. So that's why I'm inclined to go with execution in that particular scaling phase.
Nice. Okay. Last but not least, what's more important in a tech business, in a fintech business? Is it the people or is it the tech?
It's a tough one. I would like to say people, but unless your technology is regulation-proof, secure, and trust-inspiring, you have nothing. And in fact, you have reputational damage. you can have the nicest people, but if they're not good in what they do and they create excellence around product, then sorry, I have to go with technology in this case, but purely because we're talking about what affects people on the other side first. And if you don't have that sorted out, then you have nothing to sell. You have a limited group of people, and certainly you will lose your reputation, your brand, and the people you've onboarded. Whilst I would love to say people, I have to go with technology. And then at a later stage, it's going to be team pulling together and making sure that what was in the kernel in the beginning continues to live and change and evolve. But technology first, I'm afraid.
Brilliant. No wrong answers here. So you've heard it from Nicola. That's the most important thing. And I completely agree. I mean, in the fintech space, it's vital to have the right tech, the right tech that meets the demand, that meets the regulation, that people can use and people can trust the solution. So brilliant answers. Now I hand over the mic to Nicola, and you are allowed to ask me one question. That's I'm sure you've been wanting to ask me for a long, long time.
I'm going to ask you an open question. It's going to be a bit more of a fun one. I mean, we're talking here as you being, you're an expert in scaling tech companies and working with founders and having this amazing podcast. But let's go back in time. What did you want to be when you were little?
When I was little, okay. That's a big one, right? When I was little. In all honesty, the answer to this. So just to give you a bit of background here, I had a chat with Nicola a few weeks ago, and we jumped in. We spoke for about 5 minutes on about the business stuff, and the next sort of 30 minutes was about tennis. What I wanted to be was a tennis player. Me and my brother, I grew up in Johannesburg in South Africa, a house and what have you. And in our back garden, we had a little back garden. We continuously played for hours on end, days on end, months on end, years on end. We played tennis, the Grand Slams, Wimbledon, US Open, whatever it was, we played it. And I played against my wall every day. So I wanted to be a tennis player. When I was young, sports was in my blood and still is in my blood. And thank goodness it's rubbing off for my kids. I wasn't able to make it, but my kids are doing it right now, and they're enjoying it. But when I was younger, it was all about sports and working in that way, working in that industry. And actually, when I was older, I went in and did a couple of little ventures in golf. I designed an app, a golf app around setting your yardages, your driving yardages on a little, it wasn't a watch because I don't know what we could, a little app that you could do driving yardages when you're on the course. It wasn't, everyone was like, you're a crazy man. Why do you need that? 20 years later, Garmin have this. So I should have stuck to it. But anyway, anything in the sporting industry, absolutely loved it. And, but needless to say, I changed paths a few times, and I've had an awesome journey to date, a number of different interests, a number of different career sort of steps to get to where I am today. So, all is not lost. And I'm trying to interview someone from Wimbledon on my podcast this week. So there we go. that would say the sports flavor in my veins, and also that runs through my family.
Brilliant. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, cool. Great question. So, folk out there, if you want to get in touch with Nicola, what's the best way to do that, Nicola?
LinkedIn.
Yeah?
Yes, I do answer messages on LinkedIn, and I do answer requests on LinkedIn.
Brilliant.
So ping me for any exchange you would like to initiate, and I'm sure we all go through the same pain, so shared pain is gain.
Yeah, brilliant. And I'll include your LinkedIn details on the show notes. So, no need to scramble around looking for it. All be available on the show notes. Get in touch with Nicola if you had any questions. And, Nicola, really, really fun show today. Enjoyed having you on the show, and looking forward to August the 1st when a new adventure begins for you.
Yeah, thank you so much for those inspiring questions. You certainly gave me food for thought for my own new venture. So that's been, thank you for that little coaching session. and thank you so much.
Awesome. Great.
Thank you for listening to the FinTech Scaling Show podcast. Please take advantage of the free gift Richard has waiting for you. It's his new ebook, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. Simply go to scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up. That's scaleupconsulting.co.uk/sign-up.